this week on Art of the Air features country music singer and songwriter Jessica Lynn sharing her new album, All I Own. Next, we feature Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Carmen Vincent, plus her new role as executive director for Project Neighbors. Our spotlight's on the return of the Tomfoolery Fun Club to Michigan City's Oryx Shrine on February 15th for a special Valentine's Day show.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. They've been with us many times before from the Tomfoolery Fun Club, but they also have a few other things to share. We have Tom Bielak and Michelle Piskel, and they're going to tell us a little bit about returning back to the thing for Valentine's Day and some other things. Both of you, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for having us, Larry. Thanks, Esther.
Yeah, it's nice seeing both of you.
Tell us about the return of Tomfoolery to in 2025 and maybe a few other things that are coming up past this Valentine's Day.
That sounds great. Well, again, the Tomfoolery Fun Club back in action this February 15th at the Oryx Shrine in Michigan City. This will be our sixth trip back to Michigan City. It's an annual event for the Shriners, and we're happy to be back with an evening of comedy and live music. The show itself, we have three stand-up comedians and a fabulous band. Our comedians consist of, Michelle, you want to take it from here?
Sure. We have Jan Slavin, who returns to the Tomfoolery Fun Club stage. We also have John McCombs, who has been with us, and he has been traveling around the world doing comedy, and he's just returned back to the United States. And then we also have Brian Hicks, who has been all over stages in Chicago, especially Chicago Theater is one of his big stages. So we're excited about having these comedians with us and bringing some laughs to our area, right? It always makes life more interesting and joyful when we get some laughs in. So we're going to be sure to share those.
It's good therapy, having these laughs, right?
Yeah. At the Oryx Shrine. I was going to say, Brian actually tours with Michael Carbonaro periodically. He warmed up for him at the Chicago Theater a couple of years ago. We had the chance to see him up there. So very talented guy. And musically, if you followed the Chicagoland rock and roll scene back in the late 70s and 1980s, there was a band called Rockin' Horse. And one of these bands that was right on the cusp of stardom, just terrific hard rock with four-part harmony. And they periodically, kind of like Tomfoolery, comes out of retirement from time to time. Put on a show for us, and they're terrific. So they're just great guys, too. So overall, it's going to be a great event, just in time for Valentine's Day. And I always say, for guys, it's the easiest Valentine's evening to prepare for, because all you have to do is buy tickets. You don't have to talk. You don't have to do anything. Just buy the tickets, bring your date, and you'll be a hero at the end of the evening. Trust me.
Sounds great. And any quick, before we move on, we got a couple other things we want to talk about, but the other dates coming up in 2025?
That's really it for right now, Larry. Like I said, Michelle and I, we've kind of moved on to some different projects and some different things. But the Shriners, they insist. In fact, they've already asked us to come back for 2026 So we won't disappoint them. But
yeah, nice and steady.
Absolutely.
Well, you have a follow-up book to your, it hasn't come out yet, but we want to give you a chance to talk about it because you're, and it's not even actually completed. It's in the process, but tell us a little bit about that.
Thanks. Well, the first book was called I Traveled the Road to Nowhere and I Arrived Safely, 7 Key Takeaways from a Series of Career Blunders. And I believe me, I made more than 7, but I stopped it there. And it was pretty well received by many of my contemporaries. So what I decided to do is come out with a sequel, and the sequel is called We Traveled the Road to Nowhere and We Arrived Safely. So giving others the opportunity to share some of their lessons learned. And one of the writers in this book will be none other than Miss Michelle.
Yeah,
I was kind of hoping that's what the we meant.
Yes, I think there will be, is it 7 other authors, guest authors that'll come together in the book, and I get to be part of that. So I'm excited about that and a lot of good energy around the book.
It sounds exciting. Now, there was something I came across is you did a little film and it's called Don't Play Umpire. And I know, Tom, you've always been interested in baseball and everything like that. So tell us a little about that. That and you both produced that, by the way.
Yes, we did. Actually, I was a member of the 1972 Edison Little League team that played in the Williamsport, Pennsylvania Little League World Series. And that happened over 50 years ago. And as the years went by, Michelle and I talked about how nice it would be to kind of get everybody together and do sort of a retrospective look, sort of a mini documentary. I really wanted to get my coaches videotaped because they were getting on in years, and I was able to bring together a lot of the players. And through Miss Michelle's technical wizardry, she taught me how to do all this. And at the end, it was what I think is a pretty nice look back. And more importantly, though, the lessons that we learned as 12-year-old boys trying to figure out our way. We talk about leadership. We talk about teamwork. Lessons learned about life in general.
Where can you view that?
It's available on YouTube. It's called Don't Play Umpire. And that the title comes from something that my coach, Pete Vargolich, would say often. You know, for example, if you ran to first base and you thought you were going to be safe, but the umpire called you out, he would say, hey, look, don't play umpire. Just play ball.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Well, you guys got a lot of things going, and you have to keep us up to date on other tomfoolery events because those are always a joy. You know, the last time I just popped in, you know, we were at our, you know, in our neighbor location here at the Allure, right across the lake from us. So, well, once again, tell us about the dates, how they can get tickets and everything to your upcoming event on February 15th.
Sure. You can get tickets at our ever famous website, tomfooleryfunclub.com. And those are ready for you to order there. You could also go to the Oryx Shrine if you're in that Michigan City area, or call them for tickets as well, or actually tables if you wanted to reserve a table. That's also available. And then find us on all social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, tomfooleryfunclub.com.
Sounds great. Sure. That's Tom Bielek, Michelle Piskel, Tomfoolery Fun Club, and many other things. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Esther.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And a Spotlight Extra.
So the show is Rules for Living. It's going to be starting February 14th and running until March 3rd. And it's going to be at Chicago Street Theater, and you can get tickets there.
Art in the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hi, everyone. This is recording artist David Arkenstone, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Jessica Lynn to Art on the Air. Jessica is a country music singer and songwriter and all-around wonder. She tours internationally, garnering many accolades, and is also a member of the U.S. Department American Music Abroad program as a global ambassador for American music. To end a full year of engagements in December, she produces a Christmas spectacular, a very Merry Christmas. She also uses her platform for humanitarian causes as an outspoken advocate for veterans, young women, children, animals, and the arts. She is surrounded by family, many in her band. They just released a new album titled All I Own, a testament to her resilience and artistry. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jessica. It's really wonderful meeting you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jessica, we have always want our audiences to kind of get to know our guests. They're a whole, like, all origin story. You know, how I keyed up by saying is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Jessica.
Oh, man. So I always knew I wanted to do music. Most people say, I decided I wanted to be a singer at whatever years old. There was never a decision for me. It was just all I ever did and all I ever wanted to do. I don't ever remember a true defining moment. It was just my path from as early as I could talk and sing.
So was the family singing? Is that, you know, so was it just part of daily family life?
It was. You know, my dad always played music. My mom was a singer. So I grew up with it in my house. And when I was 13, I started my first band and I started performing all over Manhattan and all over the place. And then I just continued down that path. That band, we had something really special. We were all childhood best friends, but they were kids. And I more had an adult mentality where I knew this is what I wanted to do. So that band fell apart and I was heartbroken because we were very close to a big record deal. And I decided I wanted to do country music because I always loved it. Really, always loved it. Growing up, listening to it. And rock and roll, which is what the high school band was. And so, which you can tell now, if you listen to my music, it's very much so a mix of rock and roll and country and soul and all other things that I loved growing up as a New Yorker and in a household where there were many different styles of music always present. And so it's funny because I wanted to record a demo. I went to my dad and said, hey, can you help me record a country music demo of all these new songs I've been writing? And he had the idea, which he loves to admit, you know, why don't you try a television special? Everybody records a demo of new music. Let's try something different. You're already an Italian New Yorker that wants to do country. Let's really take that being different thing to new heights. So we filmed a television concert special. And shoestring budget. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. It was racked up every credit card trying to pay for it. And he always said, worst comes to worst, you have a live recording to shop yourself with. And that television special wound up going nationwide on public television and PBS, which started my whole career.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great. You know, of course, we're big PBS NPR supporters here at Art on the Air because that's where our show is heard on, too. So
that's true. So, Jessica, during those young years that you're talking about, were you writing music at that point?
I was. I always wrote all of the music for that band, which is, I think, also why when things fell apart, I no longer wanted to rely on other people, which is why I became a solo artist. I was writing all the music. My parents were the ones kind of spearheading us, getting out there and gigging and helping with everything. And I was like, why am I making my whole future dependent on other people in a band? A band is a very, very hard thing. But I am very lucky that the band that I have now has been with me 14 years. So I think just when you find the right people and you're on the right path, you just get shown the way.
Well, we talked about it also before we started, is that it's a little bit of a family affair, too, in
yeah.
your band. Tell us a little bit about that. Who's in the band? Who manages it? Your backup singer or something, and even your lead guitarist, you all have kind of some sort of a relationship.
Yeah, so the lead guitarist is my husband, Steve. The background singer and keyboard player is my mom, Victoria. My dad is the bass player. We take our rescue dog, Audrey, on tour. She is this stage manager. My sister is crew. My best friend sells our merch. So it is one big family affair.
It's just so lovely.
Yeah, that's great. And it's such a great way to keep the family together and yet stay things. So you talked about making the special, and of course, I'm interested, like being in New York, how country music kind of became the thing, because you know you don't associate New York with country music exactly. You know, you think you got to be from the South or Tennessee. So, how did that genre become? And I realize it's not, you aren't just country, but kind of that country in general.
Right? Was it like a particular artist that sparked your? Yeah,
it was. My dad always loved country, so it was always on. Every single car ride was George Strait or Phil Vassar, and which I got to play with Phil a few years ago, which was a huge dream come true for me because he was one of the people that really got me into country music. Shania Twain, I'm a very big fan of, and my earliest memory of music ever is Glen Campbell's Rhinestone Cowboy. He always Glen Campbell's record.
That was a good one. And for me, it's like, of course, Dolly Parton. I mean, I just...
Well, and country music is kind of, you know, what's defined as country now has kind of become, in many cases, what they call country pop. I mean, when you think about the traditional country western, it has kind of evolved into a whole different thing. So where would you put your genre exactly?
Well, I'm marketed as a crossover artist because I do crossover into so many different genres. My music is country storytelling and foundations with rock and roll riff energy, instrumentation, with soul Motown style harmonies.
With epic really, Broadway delivery.
Yeah. it's a mix. And, you know, I think over the years as an artist, I've really found myself where in the beginning, I remember I was so writing for the industry and like, what's going to get played on country radio? What's going to get me on this big festival? And then I realized that my best music comes when I'm just myself and I'm all of these very authentic things that makes me me.
I don't know. And actually, after watching the bits of the Christmas special, you are such a great producer. I mean, of like wildly imaginative, interactive events. So, I mean, that's like a separate calling all on its own to be able to produce something that magnificent. I mean, the costuming and because you can see your hand in everything.
Thank you. I do. That show is my baby. So I do everything from the set design to all of the visuals that you see. I work with every school personally, costuming. It's a huge undertaking, special effects. I designed the entire light show with my dad. So every single color, every single wrapped gift that you see on that stage is from my imagination. And it's funny because we were laughing, you know, when we were kids, my sister, we used to put on all of these productions that I would do in my living room with me, you know, in my mom's dresses or my Disney costumes or things like that. And I would imagine these huge things in my head, and we were laughing after we got home from the tour this year. Like, you really did it. You know, now I'm doing it for real. This isn't just you that I'm bossing around the living room.
So true, though, so many of our interests as children, really, that's a lot of times that's where we're headed. You know, we get those glimpses.
Well, I want to talk about your current album. It's called All I Own, which is new. It was just released on January 17th, if I believe. And we want to hear one of the songs, Something About You. Just tell us a little bit about that. We'll take a listen to that.
So every track on this record is, at surface level, a love song or a story about life or loss. But on a deeper level, every single song is also a critique of the music business. And good, both good and bad. So... Something About You is about falling in love with my husband. That's what I wrote it about. But it's also, which you can see in the music video, it's also a love story to my fans, the people that have supported me, that have been there for me. And again, if you listen more closely to the lyrics, you could tell that it's about live music, which the music video shows. It's a tour documentary style music video.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Here is Something About You, All I Own, Jessica Lynn.
Other side, baby. I
Was Something About You, All I Own album with Jessica Lynn, sharing it with us today on Art in the Air.
So I do want to know, like, further, and you don't have to answer this because it's probably personal, but so it was about your husband. How did he find his way to the band, and were you two seeing each other before he became part of your band?
That's such a cool question. So my husband had nothing to do with music before meeting me. He was on track to be a professional baseball player. And he started, when we started just being friends in college, we met on the very first day of school. And one, I knew there was something special the minute I met him. I knew before he did. That's because us women sometimes we're a little more intuitive about the which I would tease him about. But he started coming. I was playing in cover bands when I was in high school and in college. That was my job. So he would come see my cover band in the local bars, and he really found an interest in guitar. He started learning guitar. Then he started playing as the second guitar player in these cover bands and in these bars. And he worked so hard. I have never seeing someone work like he did. He wanted to join once I started to transition into the more professional, I guess you could say, Jessica Lynn era. And he kept saying, let me join. And I was like, no, you know, you're not ready yet. We were doing major festivals and things once the television special aired. My guitar player wound up moving to Nashville, not for music, for business. And we were desperate for a guitar player because we had a huge touring schedule coming up. We were playing with Brad Paisley, Montgomery Gentry, I mean, major, major country superstars. And basically, he was our last option. And so, but I have to tell you, he was incredible. And I'm so happy that it worked out that way, because that's how it was meant to work out, because of his lack of experience at that point. He would have never been considered. However, now he works with every major guitar brand in the world as a gear influencer. He's done incredible things. He makes sounds and presets for some of the biggest guitar companies in the world. He's an incredible player. So it's just funny sometimes, you know, when you really are dedicated and you want something bad, you can chase any dream that you
Well, it sounds have. Like he was supremely motivated. But also when you talk about baseball, that requires extreme dedication. So he already had that quality going in. So
he did. Yeah. That work ethic, that sports. Right. Teaches. It's funny. He's over here looking at me like, what is that?
Thumbs up there. Yes.
Yeah, no, really. I'm so proud of him. And it's our first festival. So his first time on stage was opening for Brad Paisley.
Wow. Right. That's the way to do it.
And which is Brad Paisley also wound up being our wedding song too, which was really cool. But there's actually a photo that we still have to frame. And I've been saying this for years, but I remember and this was a huge festival. His first solo, he walks up to take his guitar solo. And in my head, I'm like, please, 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 like, please don't choke. You know, this is such a big moment. And he killed it. And a photographer actually caught the moment of him in front of me and me like looking at him like, you did it. One of my favorite photos that we have.
Oh, such a sweet
story. A great relationship. And well, and that's great that relationship, like, you know, like with my wife, grew out of basically a friendship first. We were friends and everything like that, and it just kind of worked out. Well, I would like to hear another song from All I Own, I Never Said It'd Be Easy. Give us a little thumbnail about that.
That's a story of finding yourself and taking the path less traveled, really. And life is never easy. The things that come are roadblocks are never easy. But when you find who you're supposed to be and you find that road that you're supposed to travel down, everything finally makes sense. And you find just such pure happiness in life.
Very good. Let's take a listen to it. I Never Said It'd Be Easy from the new album, All I Own, Jessica Lynn.
A good day to be alive. Now I'm
Never Said It'd Be Easy from the album All I Own with Jessica Lynn here on our guest on Art on the Air.
I know. I wish we had time to hear about each and every song, what the backstory is. That'll have to be a different segment, maybe.
I would love that. Very excited that the record went number one in multiple countries this weekend.
So I saw that on Amazon and in quite a few of the other platforms and such. Well, we're coming to the point that we're going to have to wrap it up here, as I know it goes really fast. But tell us a little bit about your tour schedule, things that are coming up. This is going to air in early February. So tell us a little bit about what's coming up for Jessica Lynn and everyone.
So I'm heading to Nigeria next. I work with the government, a program called American Music Abroad and Yes Academies, and I'm going to be mentoring 30 incredible young singer-songwriters in Nigeria and teaching them how to create a successful and profitable career in the arts, which I'm thrilled about. Then we're already gearing up for all Christmas stuff, believe it or not, booking that whole tour. We have a big European tour booked, which I'll be announcing shortly, as well as a lot of USA dates coming.
And how can people find you online?
My website is jessicalynnmusic.org, and then we also have all the links to all the social pages up there, which are all Jessica Lynn Music.
Yeah, she's all over social media, by the way, folks. You can't miss it. And if you go to our website where her picture is, you click on it, it'll take you to that website too. Jessica, thank you so much. Like I said, I've been following you for some time, and I thought at some point now with the album, I had an excuse to invite you to come on the show in February, talk to you in person. So that's Jessica Lynn. Her new album is All I Own, and you can see her online and watch the great energy she has when she performs. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Same here. Thank you for having me. It was so nice to meet you guys.
Yeah, thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
This is Adam of The Empty Pockets, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Carmen Vincent to Art on the Air. Carmen is a Chicago Midwest Emmy Award-winning producer, a filmmaker, a Nikon storyteller scholar, and a selected participant in Adobe's Creator Camp. She has worked with clients and has told stories from across the country and in the United Kingdom and Palestine. She uses personal experiences with non-visible disabilities to pursue her work with creativity, empathy, and curiosity. She is also the new executive director for Neighbors, Inc. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Carmen. I have to say, it was really incredible watching your videos and films, and it's such a pleasure meeting you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, we really like having you on board, and we'll talk about your Project Neighbors thing later, but we're mostly interested in your work as a filmmaker, but also we want to know your origin story. How I like to say is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Carmen.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up, my family moved around a bit because my dad was a pastor and switched churches up. So I've lived in Indiana, Connecticut, and mostly grew up in Wisconsin. That's where he is now. Being a pastor's daughter, I think, primed me to be really interested in other people's stories. I felt a lot of pressure to kind of reflect the morals and values of our church. So the way I manifested that was being quiet, being a listener, trying to really care deeply about what other people are going through and focus on that. I remember in quiet moments in middle school, writing poetry and short stories. I have some short stories I wrote, I think as early as like 5 or 6 years old, in my little memories box. And that eventually, you know, transformed into a love for visual storytelling through filmmaking, just because it felt more accessible to a wider audience. So as I was exploring colleges to go to, being from Wisconsin, I was, you know, ready to go explore a new place. And Valparaiso University was one of the colleges I checked out. Absolutely loved their, you know, liberal arts focus and Christ College program. So I ended up choosing Valpo just because I felt like I was going to get a really well-rounded education, not just focused on, you know, the filmmaking or digital media side of things, to really get a holistic sense of what it means to be educated and to pursue knowledge. So my very first filmmaking endeavor was part of an internship I did in Bethlehem, Palestine, where we told the story of an arts university there and how they've overcome a lot of adversity with the conflict. And that just set a fire in my belly to tell more people's stories. And here we are now. I've got an Emmy sitting on a shelf in front of me and a lot of people I've met and enjoy telling stories about. It's been an incredibly fulfilling endeavor for sure.
So do they find you or do you find them or what kind of combination is it? Like, especially those first ones, like how did the first ones beyond the internship transpire?
I think I've been really lucky in that I seem to just have an easy time finding really fascinating people who are willing to tell their stories. But I think in almost every project, I approached them. And I really looked for, you know, is this a story we haven't really heard much about before? Is this a person who is ready to tell their story? Because, you know, that's not always the case. And I never want to exploit someone's experiences. And then I always try to find a way that I can personally connect with the story I'm telling. So a lot of times I can connect with my experiences with disability or, you know, just growing up wanting to feel understood and heard. And it's a privilege to be able to help other people feel that way.
So I'm interested in a little bit of the more technical side of it. So tell us about some of your process. Not only you got the story you want to tell, but let's talk about like the actual filming, shooting, editing, the whole thing about how do you put a whole piece together?
Yeah, I mean, lots of Excel spreadsheets involved with logistics. Yeah, I'm a very organized person, and sometimes that can actually hinder you, especially in the documentary space, because you have one story you set out to tell, and in documentary, you almost always end up telling a different story than you set out to tell. So that requires a lot of flexibility, especially in the editing phase, trying to, you know, almost reconstruct a narrative that you hadn't expected from the get-go. And then during filming, you're constantly readjusting of, oh, wow, this is the story now. So now I need to go capture this B-roll instead or interview this person who I didn't even know about when I started filming or go to this event with my subject. So logistically, there's a lot of re-editing what you expected for things to turn out to be. And that as a rigid, organized person, that's been really helpful in my own personal development to practice.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of that is how much of this do you do yourself hands-on? Do you work with a crew? Do you tell us all about that. Like, yeah, do you do the editing yourself? Do you bring someone in to edit? Who films for you? Who does, you know, tell us the technical details. I think some of our people might be interested in that.
Sure. So I historically have worked mostly on my own just for budgetary reasons, because I don't ever want to bring people on for free. I want to be able to pay people for helping me. So in my early days, when I was just learning the art, I saved up for a prosumer camera and some cheaper audio equipment. I was able to rent some equipment from our communications department at BU, and just kind of roughed it and made it work. And then as I went on, and especially with Teacher of Patience, I was able to fundraise to, you know, have a few crew days and have a consulting editor so that when I did put an edit together, I have someone much more experienced than me to point out, you know, areas for improvement. I was able to bring on an executive director from New York who has been working in the industry for, you know, 30, 40 years. She's very experienced. So I think I prefer collaboration, but it's not always the most attainable, especially in independent grassroots filmmaking.
Right. It's expensive when you have crew people you're doing, especially an independent project where you probably don't have a, you know, cash flow for, you know, an audience per se. You know, it's difficult. What prosumer camera did you use?
Okay. So I love mirrorless cameras. I've always been a Sony girl, but I don't judge if you use a different model. I think, and what's cool about equipment is that it really doesn't matter what you use. People can get hung up with the technicals and the specs and like the sensor size and what lens you're using. And that's always like 1% of it to me. The rest of it, most of it is how you tell the story. That's what's going to keep people invested, even if you film on your iPhone.
Right.
you know, people, those make it to film festivals now.
Sure.
But what I've learned with equipment, the most important thing to invest in is audio, because bad audio, people are not forgiving of bad audio. So people will be forgiving of pixelated video, but not of scratchy, low quality audio.
You're so right, because that's one of my big criticisms of independent films is the audio is terrible, and mm-hmm. it makes it unwatchable and everything as a result. So you're really right about that. And you're right about the equipment. I always tease people, especially with still photography. I always tease them whether they're a Canon or Nikon shooter or something like that. I'm a Canon yeah. shooter, but it's the equipment that you learn on. And that's the important yeah. part. And you're right, is at a certain level, when you get a certain level of professionalism, it's not so much about that. There's also people I call equipment photographers and things like that. Oh, I've got this new lens and I've got this. And yeah, but what do you do with it? You know, and that's the important right. part, like what you're talking about.
Well, I have, since you brought up budget, I have a question about budget. So within your budget, how does everyone's challenges impact your filming, including your own like non-visible challenges? Do you budget that in, like the extra time that might be needed to complete a project?
Yeah, I think it's always good to have a contingency fund in your budget and an accessibility fund. And that includes like captioning and audio description for the deliverable that you submit to festivals and distribute. But it also includes, you know, maybe if you need a locations producer to find an accessible location to film in versus, you know, just choosing any old place or studio because your subject is a wheelchair user, or, you know, there are all kinds of accommodations that you might need to make. And that goes a long way with your subjects because it makes them feel, you know, seen and heard and
understood.
Yeah, exactly. Understood. So it's well worth, and it's not even a lot of extra money. It's pretty negligible, actually, but it's just not common practice yet. It's becoming more so, which is encouraging. But yeah, there are still, I mean, so many films that I watch don't even have audio descriptions, and they're made by these big studios. And it's like that it would be such a minuscule part of your budget, and it goes such a long way. So
what do you edit on? I'm just curious. Do you do it on Premiere? Or?
Yeah, I use Premiere Pro. I learned on the Adobe Creative Suite, and I know that the industry standard is still Avid somewhat, but I mean, Everything Everywhere All at Once was edited on Adobe Premiere, and they won, I believe it was an Oscar for best editing. And that I think was the catalyst for Premiere becoming more widely accepted in the industry, especially with a lot of like freelance contractor work where you're using your own equipment. A lot of people use Premiere.
Well, it's more accessible, I think, too.
In
that regard. So you're right. It's sometimes hard to break through the Apple hold on that too. Just like in, you know, some people still in the graphics design and things like that. You know, the small percentage of them still use Apple. It has to be Apple for their photos.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't really much matter anymore. It comes back to the content and everything, I think, like we've talked about.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Any projects that you are still interested in doing?
Oh my gosh, I have a list of like 80 ideas that I wanted to. There's a lot. I think top of mind would be a film about, you know, caregiving for loved ones, especially loved ones with dementia. That's an experience I recently went through with my mom. And in the moment, it was too close to home to do like a documentary focused on my own experience. But I think I could really use that to inform an empathetic approach to capturing that in the future. But yeah, I mean, right now with this focus on Project Neighbors, I'll have less time to commit to filmmaking, but I'll never lose that filmmaking bug. So I'm sure there'll be more in the future.
Well, do you have one in the works right now or one that's on pause?
Yeah. So my latest project, Teacher of Patience, we're still doing so much with distribution. We're getting a lot of mileage out of it, which is fantastic. Right now, we're working with state agencies to try to incorporate it into continued education for first responders. So that's a whole other endeavor. The government moves very slowly with those kinds of updates, and the platforms can can be difficult as far as like accessibility goes. So, you know, advocating for implementing that kind of addition to the film is kind of what we're working on right now. And then I think my focus will be mainly Project Neighbors.
Well, since you brought it up, let's talk about that. You are just being brought on as the replacing a gentleman that's been there for years and years and years, Paul Schreiner, and he's been a mainstay of that. And he actually worked both as what executive director and like project manager. And I guess that position has been split in some ways. So tell us about, first of all, how you came to that position, and then, you know, what you're looking to do there.
Yeah. So I knew a couple of board members. A couple of them had been my professors at VU. One was a really close mentor. One was a really close friend of mine. So when the position became open, I was encouraged to apply and throw my hat in the ring. You know, being a 25-year-old filmmaker, even though I owned a successful video editing business, I was a little concerned about, you know, what they would see in me or not. So I didn't really expect things to unfold the way they did, but luckily they did see something in me. You know, the fiscal management side of filmmaking, the fundraising, the community outreach, the communication side of things, I think are all strengths of mine that I can bring to Project Neighbors.
Effortlessly slides into the same territory.
It kind of does. Yeah. In an unexpected way, it sure does. But I am well aware of, you know, the Paul Schreiner's incredible legacy. I'm not going to even attempt to fill his shoes because it's just not possible. I'm going to, you know, like bring my own pair of shoes and try to fill those.
Compliment his.
Yeah, exactly. And I have a great staff that I get to work with. And like you mentioned, his position was kind of split in two. So there's a housing director that I'm collaborating with now too. So I don't actually have to go and build the houses myself, which is great because I am not the handiest person, but I sure can write a newsletter and fundraise and solicit donations and do community outreach and all of that. So I'm really excited to, you know, pursue something that feels really meaningful with the skills that I've been able to foster so far.
Well, and your shoes can be stilettos and not work boots.
There you go.
Well, no, they can be work boots too.
They can be work boots too. Maybe I'll have a few.
But you're going to bring your own. You're going to bring your own shoes. So I just thought that. Would
yeah.
Be. Are you going to have any relationship with WVLP? I mean, they fall under the board for Neighbors, but anything with that, because Paul, of course, was deeply involved with the operation of WVLP and, of course, was the founding member of that.
Yeah. The legacy Paul has created with WVLP is so admirable. And I love the mission of bringing community stories to the community itself. So I see a lot of value with WVLP, and especially at, you know, being directly in Project Neighbors, you know, budget. I mean, there's so many close ties. So I don't see why we wouldn't continue to support WVLP. I do think, you know, just the first couple months at least, it's going to be a lot of learning, a lot of seeing, you know, what's working, what maybe could work better. And, you know, with my background in communications and digital media, I, of course, super appreciate the work that WVLP does and would love to support it.
Right. Yeah. Any chance of getting you on air in like a regular slot?
I mean, that would be really cool. I could foresee that. Yeah. I've already had a few ideas for a potential show, but it's something that I will probably have to put a little bit lower on the priorities list as far as like just starting out and trying to establish, you know, fundraising strategies and communication strategies and stuff. But it's definitely on my to-do list. Don't worry.
Oh, that's good.
So Carmen, with the people that you have filmed, do you maintain contact like Claire Connors and Mike Smith, and I'm trying to remember Sawyer Patrick. I mean, they were really great films, and it seems like you developed such a strong connection that I'm sort of hoping, and I imagine that your family increases that way.
That's exactly how I would put it, that I'm kind of collecting family members through those filmmaking endeavors. Sawyer is one of my close friends. He lives in Indianapolis right now, so every time I'm down there, we go to a cat cafe. We text back and forth. Claire Conan obviously is in England, so it's a little bit harder to see her.
Yeah.
But we message a lot. We send each other birthday cards and such, and check in on each other. And then Emily from Teacher of Patience is one of my best friends. She comes over a lot, and we watch Taylor Swift concerts and Queer Eye and all that fun stuff. Yeah.
That's what I imagined.
Yeah,
that sounds great. Coming into this position, you've talked a little bit about that. Do you see any, and you may not know yet because you're just getting into it, but changes you might be making, or how you, obviously since they split the position, it's you're not going to be out there, you know, supervising the construction, but you know, any differences like that you might do?
Yeah, I think what's going to be my personal challenge to myself is to come in and absorb as much as I can, figure out what everyone else really appreciates about the organization and thinks is working well, and use that to inform what I change or adapt, because the last thing I want is to come in and make people feel like I'm changing everything or that I don't respect the history of Project Neighbors, because that couldn't be further from the truth. So I do have a bunch of ideas, but that being said, you know, they'll be run by the board. They'll be respectfully, like, evaluated. And if I have to name one thing, I'm a website girl. I've always built the websites that I use. So I'd love to, like, go back in and figure out how to, you know, increase the effectiveness of the website. But it's a good website. So, yeah, I have some ideas, but I want to make sure that I pursue them respectfully and make sure that I'm learning everything I can first.
And not to toss anything else, Sue, I for years have been griping about the WVLP website, and so much of it is so out of date. I mean, just linking it to our show page, you know, and things like that. And that's not Greg's expertise. So I've talked about it because I'm on the board for WVLP, and it's like,
yeah,
it's like, oh my gosh, we really need to do that. And it keeps, I supplied a bunch of graphics and photos of all the people, and
right.
It's set in a file so far, but not to throw something else.
No, not at all. It's on my to-do list now. I'll ask Paul about who does it right now and figure out, you know, what we can do moving forward.
Nobody does it right now, is that the thing?
Oh, okay. Then I will see how I can help. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, we have just a few minutes left here, and we talked about like maybe possible projects, but do you think that being in Project Neighbors is going to, you know, is there still going to be time for you to do some of the in-depth stuff that you're doing? I mean, are you going to have some time balance there? Because that, it's one thing to do that type of job, like as executive director, but and that can be fulfilling. But what you do is so meaningful with your documentary work and your work. You know, I'm sure you don't want to totally abandon that.
Yeah, I really don't. And it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out what that bandwidth would look like. But I do think there's synergy with my filmmaking skills and, you know, the needs of Project Neighbors in its efforts to communicate the work it's doing. So I almost wonder if there's some kind of in-depth documentary I could create about either the work that Project Neighbors is doing or a couple of people that we serve in their stories, or, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities.
There's a great tie in there.
Yeah.
So exactly. How do people find your video and film work?
Sure. So my portfolio website is carmenvincent.com. And Teacher of Patience has its own website. It's teacherofpatience.com. And, you know, you can view Teacher of Patience through that website and all the rest of my films through carmenvincent.com.
Excellent. And how do they get hold of you at Project Neighbors?
Yeah. So right now I will be working in our office at 454 College Ave. So you can always come in and say hi. We have yet to make me a work email, so that will be TBD. but I do, you know, there is a contact form on the Project Neighbors website. If you just, you know, submit a little note on there, I will make sure to get in touch with you.
Right. And your start date is what?
February 3rd.
Okay, so this will be perfect. You'll be on there, and you get a hold of Carmen there. Also, if you click on her picture on our website, that'll take you right to some contact that we decide what we're going to do, and we can everything like that. Well, Carmen, it's been a real pleasure to meet you, and I hope to meet you face-to-face. I don't know if you're going to be at the little WVLP thing on February 2nd, I think it is. They're having a open house type thing and an annual thing to meet some of the people. But anyway, welcome aboard, and I'm sure Project Neighbors and everyone is happy to have you. That's Carmen Vincent, filmmaker, but also the new executive director for Project Neighbors. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.